Eisha kendibhita shesha.
Eisha kendibhita shesha.
Karano militekshana.
Karano militekshana.
Risha samatir ahosvit.
Risha samatir ahosvit.
Kim nusyat kshatrabandhuvi.
Kim nusyat kshatrabandhuvi.
Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. The king, being a devotee of the Lord, did not approve of his own action, and thus he began to wonder whether the sage was really in a trance or was just pretending in order to avoid receiving the king, who was a kshatriya, and therefore lower in rank. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe that the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. The arrangement was so made by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. So he's feeling repentant, and he's also feeling a little insecure, like, oh no, I didn't do... He's thinking about what he had done and feeling guilty about it and thinking it over. And like Murali Gopalprabhu was saying about kind of thinking of himself as lesser in that context because he's feeling bad about himself too. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. Who here has been in a situation of frustration? Okay, pretty much everybody. The plan was that for his so-called misdeed, the king could be cursed by an inexperienced Brahmana boy infected by the influence of Kali. So that's going to be the son of the sage who's going to get really angry seeing the snake around his father's neck. And thus the king would leave his hearth and home for good. His connections with Srila Shukadeva Goswami would enable the presentation of the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the book incarnation of the Lord. This book incarnation of the Lord gives much fascinating information of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, like his Rasa Lila with the spiritual coward damsels of Rajabhumi, which is in the 10th canto. So there's 12 cantos of this epic. This specific pastime of the Lord has a special significance because anyone who properly learns about this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desire and be placed on the path of sublime devotional service to the Lord. The pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to a higher transcendental position. By placing Arjuna and the Pandavas in frustration due to the intrigue of their cousin brothers, the prelude of the Battle of Kurukshetra was created by the Lord. This was to incarnate the sound representative of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita. So, by placing King Parikshit in an awkward position, the incarnation of Srimad Bhagavatam was created by the will of the Lord. Being distressed by hunger and thirst was only a show, because the king endured much, even in the womb of his mother. He was never disturbed by the glaring heat of the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama. So even in his mother's womb, when he had this nuclear weapon was launched at the womb by one of the enemies, he was peaceful and just taking shelter of Krishna. That's why we're seeing that this situation where he got angry just because he was thirsty and hungry is definitely Krishna's arrangement. The king's distressed condition was certainly unprecedented. The devotees like Maharaj Parikshit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses by the will of the Lord, and they are never disturbed. The situation in this case was therefore all planned by the Lord. Such a good feeling too, to think that something's planned all by the Lord, this whole story. So we can read it and know that everything that's happening here was meant to be by Krishna. Om Adhyanatiyanandasya Adhyananjanashakya Chakshu Adhyanatasya Shigurvi Namaha. So today's topic is anger. And we're going to look at anger. When is it justified and when is it not justified? And what the repercussions of anger, what does that what is it like when people get angry, what happens, and then how we can deal with anger that comes up in our lives. So I was thinking about this verse, the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna describes how a living entity kind of gets deluded, and it's in chapter 2, text 62. Does anybody know that translation with a microphone? Or roughly, the paraphrase.
Okay. By contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment, and from attachment, lust arises, and when lust is unfulfilled, then anger arises.
And then what's the next, what happens after that?
Then when anger arises, one becomes bewildered, and when one's bewildered, their memory is lost. When memory is lost, intelligence is destroyed, and then you're falling in the material energy, in the material pool, so to speak.
Yeah. Did you ever hear that expression, blooping? Bloop? So that came from this particular verse, that some devotees were saying, oh, it's like falling down into a pool, like it makes a sound, like bloop. And Prabhupada actually heard it from, I think it was Brahmananda and it was another devotee. They were discussing it, and then Prabhupada heard it through them and said, oh, and it became this, a word, like a noun, meaning, or not a noun, a verb, to bloop, meaning that you're falling back down into this material covering, that you're getting illusioned again, to bloop. So anger is part of this chain of things that happen. And it comes after, what did Avi say? It comes after what? Why do we get angry? From lust. So from frustrated lust, right? So we wanted something, or something's not going quite the way we wanted it to go, and then anger is a natural response. So I want you to take just a minute, you can close your eyes for this, just think about a recent time when you got angry. And I want you to ask yourself, like to find out what it was exactly, not the situation, not the details of what happened, but what was underneath the anger that caused the anger. What was actually the cause of that anger? Because anger is just a symptom. There's usually something deeper underneath that, some emotion or frustration underneath that anger. Okay, so has everybody been angry recently? Is that something that, yeah, so within the last few years, if not right now, but maybe before you joined Krishna House. So what are some things that came up for you? Like what are...
Impatience. It was a situation where I wanted something to move at a particular speed and it didn't.
Okay.
And so I became angry.
Okay. So impatience because something wasn't going at the speed that you wished it was going. Okay. What else?
Disappointment.
Disappointment.
I've been longing to perform music, like I used to. And I found out yesterday that somebody that had committed to play music with me is no longer to be playing. So I'm disappointed and angry and impatient.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Yeah, so underneath... So what we're seeing is, like, underneath the anger is another level. And so, like you mentioned, disappointment. Yes.
Injustice.
Injustice. Yeah, that's a big one. And tell me about that. How is that?
I did everything I could to... it was a situation where I did everything to... everything I could to subside the situation between me and an individual.
Yeah.
And nothing was going to be done, and out of anger, I did something.
Okay. So you felt the situation was unjust.
It was unjust,
yeah.
But I just...
Yeah.
Desiring and expected to be respected by the other person and feeling disrespected.
Yeah. So feeling disrespected by others, that comes up a lot. Why do you think that triggers anger?
It just does, I don't know.
Maybe expectations.
Expectations were thwarted?
Yeah. That's
like expectations, but being attached to a plan that you've made.
And in this case, not being respected is a very subtle thing. So when we get angry at not being respected, it's, I think it's from that desire that we feel we deserve a certain amount of respect, and when that's not given, then we feel upset. So again, it comes back to that not getting what we're wishing for.
I think those two points combined, the unjust or unfair and then lack of respect, there can also be anger that I've gone out of my way to treat a person nicely and I'm expecting reciprocation that they wouldn't treat me badly if I'm treating them nicely. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if I made some sort of mistake or something that they may be disrespectful and not understand it. And so it feels unfair. And then you're angry because they, it's unfair and disrespectful.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes you want respect, it's just your ego. But sometimes there's, you know, in being a colleague, there's so much quarrel because people tend to be selfish. And so there's an expectation of reciprocation, and then when it's not there, there's anger.
Yes, yeah. And normal human decency requires respect, too. So when we don't see that, also we feel unjust towards what we're going through. Yes, Tulsiran.
When I first got married and my husband was always cheating on me with his computer, he spends all of his time with his computer, I got really angry because I wanted to be the center of the universe.
Now he's spending time in Venice.
And now he's cheating on me with the lettuce. But that's okay.
That's the greener on this side.
So thank you. Yeah, those are all really good examples of why we get angry. Who here has gotten angry? Just a show of hands. Who here has been angry and then regretted it? So pretty much all of us, that happens. And one of the wonderful things about Krishna's pastimes, like we said, this pastime is arranged by Krishna for the Bhagavatam to be spoken, like the sequence of events. Another reason that this pastime happens is that we have an example of somebody who went through this, and it's actually very relatable to us because we've all experienced this emotion of anger and feeling frustrated in life. And then we can look to stories like this and we can see, oh, Pariksha Maharaj is also feeling repentant. He's contemplating and wondering whether maybe he misunderstood this sage, maybe he jumped to conclusions and came up with the wrong conclusion. And he's feeling repentant. And then Prabhupada says that's what a person who's devotional, who's spiritual, does. They repent when they get angry without it being directed in that appropriately. An example of this is also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a story about Dhruva Maharaj, King Dhruva. He heard that his brother had been killed by the Yakshas, which were a group of, how would you describe Yakshas? They're demons, or they're—I don't remember if they're asuras. They're a class of.
I guess they're somewhat like a celestial demoniac being. Basically.
Yes. So yeah. They're celestial, but they're of demoniac tendencies. So,
celestial werewolf.
Yes. So Dhruva's brother was killed by the Yaksha king, and when Dhruva heard that news, he got really angry. And you could say his anger was justified, right? His anger was, if somebody killed somebody in your family, I think anger is justified. You would feel really angry and want to get back at that person. So that's a normal response. So then Dhruva went there, and he had a lot of anger, and he was really powerful, and he had weapons. So he started demolishing the Yaksha race, like wiping them out of his anger. Then what happened, at a certain point, somebody named Swayambhuva Manu, one of the leaders of the universe, came and actually told, he stopped Dhruva. He said, he said this, because Dhruva was wiping out people who hadn't even killed his brother. Just out of his anger, he was taking it out on the Yaksha race, who weren't even necessarily involved in that fight between his brother and that Yaksha king. So the Manu said, "My dear son, please stop. It's not good to become unnecessarily angry. It's the path to hellish life. Now you are going beyond the limit by killing Yakshas who are actually not offenders." So beyond the limit. So that means that there was a certain limit, there was a certain scope for his anger was legitimate, and then after that, it was no longer considered appropriate. And then Prabhupada says in the purport, in this verse, the word ati roshena means with unnecessary anger. Unnecessary. When Dhruva Maharaj went beyond the limits of necessary anger, his grandfather's Svayambhuva Manu immediately came to protect him from further sinful action. So is it actually his grandfather? From this, we can understand that killing is not bad, but when killing is done unnecessarily or when an offenseless person is killed, such killing opens the path to hell. Dhruva Maharaj was saved from such sinful action because he was a great devotee. So this story is it's a good example of how there's this fine line with anger. It's kind of like you heard that example that Prabhupada uses of the surgeon's weapon, instrument, not a weapon, surgeon's instrument when they're about to do surgery. So they have like a sharp like scalpel or something. The reason I said weapon is because the analogy is used that if somebody else had that particular instrument, they could use it as a weapon. So depending who's holding that sharp knife, they could use it for good or for destruction. That's the same with anger. It's depending who's holding it and how they're using it, that it's either going to be beneficial for the world or detrimental. So that I liked that example. And I like the idea of necessary anger versus unnecessary anger. And sometimes it's difficult to know when anger is necessary or unnecessary. Srila Prabhupada, he would get angry sometimes, and his anger always was, there was always a reason why he was angry, and there was always a productive reason and a beneficial reason for his anger. For example, one time there was a big music concert, and the crowd was all standing around the stage. Prabhupada was singing with his kartals, standing and singing, and there were some devotees around him. And there were some ladies wearing saris there on the stage with Prabhupada. And some of the people in the audience were trying to like grab them, like trying to grab their clothes. And Prabhupada got really angry. And he took his kartal and started, you know, this is like a, it's like a weapon. Like, if you look at a kartal, like, you swing it. So he took it and he's swinging it by the string and was, like, going towards those people, like, get away from the, you know, like, I don't know if he was saying anything, he was still chanting, but he was expressing his anger in a very appropriate way. He was defending the devotees, and it's actually a really sweet pastime when you think about Prabhupada's anger used in that way to defend his devotees. I'm sure there are other stories of Prabhupada. Would you like to share?
Sorry. Well, there's a very funny story of Prabhupada getting apparently angry, because sometimes we appear angry, but we might not be. And one time, Prabhupada asked Jagadish Maharaj, he said, "Move the bed in this room." He said, "I'll get someone to help me." Prabhupada said, "No, you can do it yourself." Then Prabhupada went back to his bedroom, went back to his office, and Jagadish is dragging the bed across the room, and it's screeching so loudly. So Prabhupada rang his bell. "What are you doing? Trying to write?" So Jagadish was very forlorn and walked away. But what could he do? Prabhupada said, "Move the bed himself, and that's what he could do." Then Prabhupada rang the bell again. "Don't worry, old men get grouchy." And Bhakti Chuswami tells almost an identical story.
Yeah.
And the moral is as sometimes somebody may appear angry, but it's just like I have every day a bad hair day. You know, it's, so it's not necessarily even angry, it just might appear that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. I'll ask, does anybody else have another story they would like to share about how a great devotee used anger in an appropriate way?
Maybe just mentioning Arjuna and the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, like, in order to fight, you have to be angry. So that's kind of a prime example.
Yeah. Sometimes people get disturbed when they see that the Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield, and they think, oh, it's about violence or about anger. And like we read in this verse, there's necessary anger and then unnecessary anger. And you do require necessary anger in order to take weapons and fight. I think that's a natural, like, fiery quality of somebody who's going to fight. They have to have some passion, some anger. But it's used in the correct way. So in this particular context, Arjuna was using it in order to help establish a society that was spiritual by getting rid of all these demoniac forces, people that were envious and very demoniac. So yeah, that's a very good example of anger being used in an appropriate way. Yes. Do you want to bring the microphone?
The Prachetas, when they came out of the water after I don't know how many tens of thousands of years of meditation, and they saw that the earth was covered with all of these trees and creepers and everything like that. They just became angry and started just burning everything with their nice powers.
Uh-huh. So was that appropriate or inappropriate? How would you say
that? It was both appropriate and inappropriate. Just like Dhruva Maharaj.
Okay.
You
have them carried away, right?
So a limit.
Yeah, exactly. So they got, initially, yes, you know, it's like, okay, they were the rulers of the earth, so they had to like maintain, you know, the earth from just getting like covered over, you know, by all this excessive vegetation. But at the same time, they got a little carried over, and so I think it was Soma, the god, that had to come and say, like, okay, just keep pacified, and here's a beautiful wife for you.
Yeah, little god.
I just thought of another example when after the battle, after the Bhagavad Gita, after the battle of Kurukshetra, and Ashwatthama got angry and he went and he killed the sons of Draupadi. But then Arjuna, he also got very angry at this, and he told his Draupadi, you know, I'm going to bring you his head. So he ran after Ashwatthama, really angry.
Yeah.
Because what he did was he killed his sons, but they were sleeping and they didn't have any weapons.
Right, yeah, so you killed the defenseless sons. I was actually going to mention that one. That's a really good example of when we're in situations where we have to decide between, or we have to work with both justice and kindness and compassion and anger. So we have a legitimate reason to be angry, like, for example, Draupadi in this situation. She was the mother of 5 boys that were killed in their sleep. And the killer was brought to her, and anybody in that situation would be, yeah, let's kill him right away. Because can you imagine how angry she must have been? She lost 5 children. So, but she was sober and enough in that moment to also think about what it would be like for the mother of a killer to lose her son, because she knew what it was like to lose 5 of them. So she actually, in this case, used her compassion, actually was greater than her anger. And so she said, no, don't kill him, just teach him a lesson, but don't kill him, because we don't want his mother to suffer in the same way that I'm suffering. So sometimes when we're going through difficult situations where we're very frustrating and angry, we also have to think about how is this going to affect the other person with compassion? Where devotees have, they want to be compassionate people, and we have to see, is this going to be beneficial for the other person involved, or is this going to actually hurt them spiritually, emotionally, physically? We don't want to hurt anybody. At the same time, we want to be able to address our anger in a way that's not hurtful. Like Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, that he talks about how we are controlled by these modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And passion is the one that is ruling anger. And he says that what good does repression do? If a person is controlled by these modes of nature, as long as we're in this material world, there's always that strong tendency to be controlled by the modes of nature that we're in this world. So Krishna says, what good does repression do? Just use that, whatever you're in, that situation, who you are and what you're going through for the spiritual cause. So we can say the same thing for anger. Like, what good does repression do? If you're feeling angry and you just stuff it, that's not a very healthy response, because that tends to come back out later in a more aggressive and sometimes violent way. I was thinking about all these school shootings that we've been hearing about in the news, and oftentimes, like we mentioned, anger is often a symptom of something deeper. Many of these people come from situations where they were bullied, or they're very unhappy, and anger became their tool to get back at people. So if we don't deal with our anger in constructive ways, then there's a tendency for it to come out in a way that's going to hurt somebody else. We have to be careful also in our presentation of Krishna consciousness when we're out in the world and we're sharing this with others, that that we don't anger others, that we don't cause them anger. And why would that be? Why do you think we have to be careful about that? About not causing the people that we're talking to or sharing with? Yeah.
One, it could bring a bad reputation to us, obviously. Mm-hmm. But another thing is that also, you know, they might develop a bad impression of devotees, and they might develop like an offensive mentality towards devotees, and so that's not good for their spiritual progress to have a bad impression of anyone who's dedicated to this path. But we might be responsible for giving them that impression if we act appropriately.
Right. Yes. And being aware that anger is an emotion that clouds the intelligence. So when we've all experienced this, when anger rises up in us, then it actually clouds the intelligence sometimes when it gets really strong. So we don't want to put somebody in a situation where they're triggered by us and to feel that anger, and then it just disrupts their spiritual lives. It actually impedes their spiritual lives. So that could even look like, that could be very, like for example, if we're interacting with people, we have to be aware of how much they're willing to, do they want to hear? Are they open? If we keep pushing it, then they could end up leaving in an angry state and we didn't accomplish anything. Or if we're just good manners, like devotees have good manners, so they're aware of whether we're disturbing others in situations. Are we, like for example, if we're doing Harinam right outside of a library or something, we're conscious, like a Krishna lunch, or keeping the instruments softer. We don't want to anger people unnecessarily. We want to be conscious and kind. So those are some thoughts that I had about anger. About one other thing I want to mention is, how do we deal with anger when it comes up in us? And actually, I looked this up, about one in ten Americans has diagnosed anger problems as bad enough to be diagnosed. But in the recent news, there are many articles about how America is becoming an angry country. That there's a lot of anger brewing in this country within the last couple of years. Partly maybe because people's expectations for this country aren't met, maybe injustice, different things, there's anger. actually, America was, I read an article how America used to be known for being a very kind of a happy country, and lately it's been more in an angry country. So I looked up some tips from anger specialists and what they suggest when we're feeling angry, what we can do in those situations. So this one's from the Mayo Clinic. So one thing we can do is before we speak, so sometimes it's difficult because we're talking with somebody and it's building. Before we even know it, we just say something that we wish we hadn't said, and that's when the regret happens. So before that happens, to pause, and if you feel that anger growing inside, to stop and think before we speak. So stop and take a moment, breathe. They say that sometimes, count to 10, you know. And sometimes we're so caught up in it that we're not able to do this, but just as much as possible to stop and think before we speak. Because sometimes words can be the most painful of anything. And then once we're calm, to express our anger. Third one is get some exercise, and that's for reducing stress, and which is often fueling anger. So if you say, if you feel like anger is happening in interaction between you and another person, then take a moment and say, okay, maybe I'm not able to handle this right now. I need to go burn off some steam, and then we'll come back to it. So like, just go run around the block or something like that. Take a timeout is another one. Identifying possible solutions instead of keep harping on it. Think, okay, what can we do together to make a productive solution to this problem? Stick with I statements. And I think it was obvious. Somebody was recently speaking about this, I statements, about saying I instead of...
I felt hurt by that.
Sorry?
Well, it's something to do with that, like, I felt hurt by...
Yeah, instead of you, yeah, instead of you're making me...
You're this and that.
Yeah. So, and then don't hold a grudge. That one's big because... as we see in the scriptures, these grudges that people hold, they actually can carry us from lifetime to lifetime. They're so strong, this resentment that we hold on to. Buddha said that it's like a burning coal in your hand you're holding on to. And you think it's actually helpful, you think it's going to somehow hurt the other person to be like holding on to it, but you're actually burning yourself. So that's important, is to find ways to let go of our resentments. Then one of them is using humor to release tension, to just deflate the situation. Another technique is practicing relaxation skills, and then the last one is know when to seek help. So sometimes when our anger is unmanageable, we can talk to another person who can help us dealing with it so that we don't hurt anybody else in their spiritual journey and affect anybody else's life negatively. So any questions or comments? Yes. The microphone.
So, as you guys were giving examples from the scriptures about, you know, anger, I was thinking, are there any examples where it's nonviolent? Because I've also read that complaining a lot will lower your intelligence and lead to anger, like what you were talking about now. So, are there any examples of nonviolent anger and how Krishna has dealt with it, or somebody has dealt with it?
If anybody thinks of anything now, please raise your hand. Tulsi Ram. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, there's a lot of examples of that. One time when Arjuna was ruling an area, a fisherman's son or whatever, it was, sons kept dying. And if
a Brahmin's son.
A Brahmin's sons. And generally, in a really well-run society, if anything goes wrong, the person on top takes responsibility. It's very different nowadays, but in most cases, but the person at top will take some responsibility. Oh, some terrible thing happened, and now the person at the top takes responsibility. So the king would take some responsibility. I'm not running a kingdom right if such horrible things happen. Children die for the parents. So the Brahmin was actually protesting. I can see him. I mean, don't know the details, but a big sign, the king is no good, marching in front. Because in this time of a more Vedic society, there was definitely freedom of speech, so people would protest, this is no good. The king actually took it very seriously and went to find out what was going on. So such kind of nonviolent protests were actually very common through the literature. Yet there are times when, in fact, even before the great epic battle of the Mahabharata, a huge battle where Gita took place, Krishna personally went and to try to actually mediate it. And the word Sanskrit translates as mediate. Being a mediator, I kind of latched onto that verse. And Krishna went and tried to get the sides to go reasonable, everything possible. Even the Pandavas said to their opponents, look, just give us a little place to live, a little village where we won't bother you anymore, and we'll be fine. And the opponents said, we won't give you enough land, you could stick a pin in. So there was every attempt to avoid it. Sometimes, like you take a case like the Nazis or something, sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. It can't go on. Sometimes violence is necessary, but the whole mood of the Mahabharata, when you go into the details, is effort after effort after effort to say that's the last resort.
Thank you. Yeah, the Kurukshetra battlefield is the final part of the story after all these attempts to avoid it, actually. Yeah, you're right. Yes, Lavanga?
I was thinking about what you said about anger, and sometimes it helps me. Like, if I get angry in a situation, like, I'll step away, but I'll also think that the reason why I'm angry is because I'm not getting some enjoyment that I think I'm entitled to. So therefore, it's actually kind of humbling, because I think that, oh, you know, I still think that I'm supposed to be the enjoyer. So this is actually how far away I am from, you know, being servant of the servant. And it also says in the Nectar of Instruction that one should be ready to tolerate all offenses to themselves, but then they should actually get very angry when a devotee is being like, okay.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, that's a really good point. When we see somebody else being treated not right, inappropriately, then we get angry, definitely. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yes, Bruce.
As a society, large society, any society, as their demands for sense gratification increase, anger as a corollary will increase. So in terms of your example about America, it only follows as our desires increase and that whole thing is flamed. You're a consumer society.
Yeah.
So, can we consume enough to satisfy our desires?
Yeah.
And then, of course, then the corollary is anger.
It's a really good point. And also that the narcissism of today, that sort of me-centric society, then we think that we are entitled to so many things. And when that's thwarted, then we get really angry. I like that point. That's why the culture is getting more and more angry, because we're feeling more and more like, hey, I'm not getting what I'm supposed to be getting, being an American citizen or whatever, you know. Yes.
I just want to add that people who are on the spiritual path often are they annoy their friends and relatives just by their existence, by their interests. And friends and relatives take great pleasure in trying to get them upset, trying to knock them off their peaceful platform. So if you can maintain your peaceful platform, it will really annoy them.
Yeah. The best, I heard that the best defense is to make the person feel like they're not even doing anything to you. It's kind of, yeah. So thank you. I'm sorry I kept you over time. And thank you so much for being here, Michael.